And this is the second morning lecture of January the 11th, 1954. The reason we're doubling up this way is because we have a lot of instruction to cover, and the instruction itself is of two varieties. One, of course, is basic law, and the other is its application. So you find me repeatedly talking about first basic laws, theory, and then you find me talking about application. Now, these two things are not today too far apart, so it's very easy to put these two things together. Well, it's about time we got into some basic material. I want to first give you a nice brace of processes, which are themselves very, very productive. And one is I wanted to tell you that, you know, of course, I told you earlier, I want to point this up, you know that any process in 8C can be reduced down to opening procedure done by walking a body around. You realize that, don't you? You better, because opening procedure is a very good process in walking the body around, and for lower level cases which are evading you, subjective processing is not very productive. You should realize that subjective processing is very often quite beyond the pre-clear, and very often you will be handling something in creative processing or mock-ups or something of the sort, and your pre-clear keeps shifting the subject, and you're having a rough time with communication and a rough time staying in there, and he's having a rough time doing it, you know, and he's kind of bouncing, like we used to call it in Dianetics. No, you're just running subjective processing on somebody. You better not be running subjective processing on. So let's take a definition there. Subjective processing is that processing which is done in the fellow's own universe. Objective processing is that processing which is done in the messed universe or in other people's universes. Subjective processing is too introverted for an awful lot of people. And you could, theoretically, subjectively process somebody right into the grave. You could do that. Now, you know what a subjective process is. It's just something done on the fellow's own universe. And that's getting mock-ups and match terminaling and moving postulates around. And, well, there's lots of any of these processes whereby he sits still and let's say he's just sitting in the middle of the room, exteriorized and doing mock-ups and this and that. In other words, overhauling and manhandling his own universe. Or he's in a body doing mock-ups or match terminals or something of the sort. These things are subjective processes. Well, now you have to realize that after you go so far down the line with a case, a subjective process fails. There are certain case levels, an awful lot of case levels, where you don't really gain anything by subjective processing. Quite on the contrary, you lose things after a while. Now, any case will stand up to quite a few hours of subjective processing, almost regardless of what condition it's in. Almost any case. And that's what we call a limited technique. It's limited by the number of hours it can be done. Now, Dianetics almost totally was a limited technique. It could be done so many hours, and then after that, why, you'd hit the peak of improvement, and then you'd start to slide off. Many factors were contributing to this. One of the factors would be poor or bad communication auditing. So, where you have communication difficulty, this is the criteria when not to use a subjective process. Is when you're having bad communication difficulty with the pre-clear. The pre-clear keeps asking you what you meant or what you want, or he doesn't know if he could do that, or he begins to reminisce, or something of the sort, and his lines of communication are not the best. The auditor finds himself sitting there trying to get a word in edgewise and trying to get an auditing command through and finds himself arguing with the preclear one way or the other. Under any of these conditions, subjective processing should be put aside in favor of something which is strictly an objective process. Now, oddly enough, there are a lot of sitting still techniques which are objective processes. So, let's not overlook the fact that almost anything you can be done with opening procedure. Anything can be done on a subjective process can be done by moving the guy around. Now, remember, too, that you can move a thetan around as well as a body. And opening procedure broadens markedly the moment you realize this. You exteriorize somebody, and then thereafter you're really doing some form of opening procedure. You're moving him around the room. And you can take a thetan, any thetan, exteriorize, is in pretty shaky condition. You first get him out, and if you do a lot of opening procedure on him, you'll get yourself in pretty good shape. Now, you can also exteriorize a thetan. This guy's in pretty good shape. He does good mock-ups. He's got everything, and then you exteriorize him, and he's apparently in good condition, but he's not quite sure about the room and about where he is and where he isn't and all of that sort of thing. You're having a little rough time with him there. You'd be a lousy auditor if you didn't realize that you've stepped the tone of the preclear down. Well, thetan plus body could operate pretty well. You know, good orientation. He knew where the body was, and the body knows where other things are. Now you exteriorize him, and he doesn't know where things are. Well, of course, you're just now operating a thetan independently without any great dependence upon the body except for the communication line that he's getting from the body. And the sooner he jettisons this one, the happier he'll be, by the way. You just remember that you're doing a breed of opening procedure on this person, and you're really, then you should be able to just understand this. I mean, lights should flash and bells ring on you right now. This drill of being pleasant and being unpleasant places is actually moving somebody around, you see, and that's really the definition of opening procedures, moving somebody around. Now, one of the best techniques you can run on him is just the way it's laid down there in opening procedure, but as a thetan. You exteriorize him, and you say, all right, now pick a place to go. Instead of just be here and be there. Now pick a place to go, now make up your mind you're going to go there. Well, the odd part of it is you may find this is too tough for him. Boy, we've really got something here, haven't we? This is too tough for him. Well, doggone it, it sure is awful easy when you're walking the body around the room, isn't it? There's nothing to that. And yet we exteriorize him, and it's too tough for him. Well, that's why you get into step 1A. You clear up a lot of his thinkingness. Exteriorized. And when you've cleared up his thinking, this exteriorized, then you can do some opening procedure. And that's why it says step 1B, if exteriorized, send him to pleasant or unpleasant places. Now, you can just develop that step 1B as opening procedure after you've cleared some of his thinking this up. But if you find it's too tough for him, why, you drop back a step. And the way you drop back a step is to clear up somebody's thinkingness. Now, it's still an objective process to have a thetan exteriorized telling you three places where he is not. Okay, that's an objective process. Give me three places where you're not. That's not a subjective process. The difference between a subjective and objective process comes up again on another definition. That which extroverts the attention is an objective process by definition, and that which introverts the attention is a subjective process. So we get extroversion, introversion. Now, 6 steps to better beingness, by the way, is designed as a sandwich. It's an objective and subjective process, extrovert, introvert, step by step. See? Step 1, Our sixth step to better beingness is extroversion. 10 minutes of nothingness. Look outside of you and find nothingness. See? And step two is an introversion, extroversion. At least the last time I looked at it, that was the way it was. All right. You can design a lot of processes on this basis of extroversion, introversion. And if you give the person as much extroversion as introversion, or more extroversion than introversion, you're going to sail along, and your case isn't going to do a sag. But if you give this character a lot of introversion and very little extroverted processing, you know, never call his attention to anything outside himself, he'll eventually slump. His communication changes will get slower and slower and slower and slower and slower. And when communication changes are slowing, 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 you just check up with yourself and find out whether or not you aren't introverting the cell's attention. Because here we have the whole problem of attention. It's whether or not his attention is going outside or going inside. Now, all his life, the mesh universe and people around him have been keeping themselves in a state of sanctity by simply saying to him continually, put your attention on yourself. Now, you as an auditor can sit there and compound the felony, compound the invalidation. These people who invalidate themselves, these people who are easily invalidated, have been said, put your attention on yourself. A fellow walks into a brick wall and bumps his head. Of course, the brick wall said to him, put your attention on yourself, fella. And this is introversion. Now, this universe batters a guy at 360 degrees all the way around and tends to make him much smaller. All right, if the universe tends to make him much smaller, then you better tend to make him much bigger, which tells you that he has some of the smallnesses to clean up internally, which is his subjective processes, and an awful lot of them to clean up extrovertically. See, he's got, they're 99 to 1. He's got a lot more to clean up in the grand sphere than in the petite sphere. Now, there have been more philosophies that tried to hit this than you can count. There's the yang and the yin. There's the microcosm and macrocosm. And so on. All they're talking about is whether the attention is outward or the attention is inward. Now, the basic attention, you notice everything goes down to attention finally. The second you get into applause, you're into attention. Attention is very important. Applause, eating, all the rest of this. Attention, attention. What gets wrong with little kids, you see them around, you can usually break it down to attention, anxiety for. It's very easy. All right. Well, let's see this then as looking outward or looking inward. And people are trying to make other people look outward at them or not look outward at them. And they're trying to manhandle other people's attention. The upset of self-determinism is this upset of attention. People try to invert the attention to keep it from being dangerous. Now, the basic process on this is just like this, and you do this process right now. Now, put your attention on the front wall. Now put your attention on top of your head. Now lift your attention around and put it on the back wall. Now put it on top of your head. Now put your attention on the floor. Now put it on top of your head. Now put it on the ceiling. Now put it on top of your head. Now do the remaining exercise with your eyes closed. Put your attention on the floor. Put it on top of your head. Now put somebody else's attention on the floor. Now put their attention on their face. Now put their attention on the floor. Now put it on their face. All right, throw them away and get two other people and have one of these put the others attention on the ceiling. And then on the person's own face. And then on the ceiling. And then on the face. Now throw that away. And you put your attention on the floor. I'll put it on the top of your head. Now put your attention on your inner world. Now put it on the walls of the room. Now put it on the inner world. Now put it on the walls of the room. Okay, now grab a hold of the two back anchor points of the room. Okay, present time, end session. Now you see what I mean by attention. Come very clear to you. Now that's all we mean by extroversion and introversion. You must realize that some of these processes put a person's attention madly on the inner world. And some of them put them on the outside world. Now, when you tell somebody, give me three places where you are not, you jolly well put his attention on the exterior world, don't you? And if you just let him say, well, all right, Boston, New York, San Francisco, and he said, give me three more places where you're not, and he said, North Pole, South Pole, and the Moon. And you say, you know, give me three more places where somebody else isn't. And he says, oh, here, there, and so on, and so on. He's getting it. Like hell he is. Because the process isn't being done. What's the process? This is covert. Most auditing is. The process involved here is making that fella look in the direction of and find out whether or not he is there. And when he does this, skip, jump, zip, zip, he isn't extroverting. And that's all you're trying to make him do. You're trying to make him kind of look in a different distance and kind of look at Chicago and sort of look at the South Pole and get an idea where that South Pole is. You also can make him look for the South Pole and then change the location of the South Pole. There's a big variation on that. Because as long as you make him look toward where the South Pole actually is, you're making him agree with the universe. And this one we must avoid wherever possible. You say, all right, now let's get whether or not you're at the South Pole. Okay. Okay, yeah, I'm not at the South Pole, he says. All right, now put the South Pole over in the middle of France and get whether you're not in the South Pole now. Nothing. Just making him less dependent, just weaving into the technique, another technique, which is simply this. The enmeshed universe has been telling him where directions are for an awful long time, and it's about time he told the enmeshed universe where directions are. So he says the South Pole is northwest of here. Now, if he can work this up to a point of where he'll get that, and he'll get complete belief on that, he's totally convinced as far as he's concerned. He's totally satisfied that the South Pole is just northwest of Brooklyn. Why, he's perfectly happy. As a matter of fact, he'll get happier and happier and happier about it. You say, all right, now, where is your childhood home? And he looks around, he finally spots it, and he gets to due west. And by the way, this technique's a little bit advanced. You understand you run this on somebody's pretty low tone, and he goes zzzz. In the first place, the test is does he know which direction these things are, rather instinctively, from where he's sitting? And if he knows which directions they are from where he is sitting, why, then another proposition is indicated. But if he doesn't even vaguely know whether that hometown is out in the next block or not, or whether it's north or south, or He's all disoriented and so forth. You're just going to disorient him further. But there are a lot of adaptions for this. You make him tell the vast universe where it's located rather than the reverse. And it's still an extroverted technique merely because he's looking out. And that's your total definition. He's looking out instead of looking in. Now, you see the difference between these two techniques. All right. Now, I'm going to give you another little two-minute run here. All right. All set? Now, put your attention on your body. Put it on the walls of the room. On your body. On the walls of the room. Now put your attention on your body and find no body. On the walls of the room and find no walls. Attention on your body and find no body. Attention on the walls and find no walls. Attention on your body and find the body in a different place and no body there. On the walls of the room and find them at a different distance and find no walls there. On your body in a different place and find no body. On the walls of the room in a different place and find no walls. Now put your attention on your body and find no body. Attention on the walls and find no walls. On your body and find no body. On the walls and find no walls. Now put your attention on your body and find a body. On the walls of the room and find some walls. Attention on your body and find a body. On the walls and find walls. Now get the nearest tactile or pressure to you. You can contact there. All right. Okay. End the session. Feel groggy? All right, grab the two back anchor points of the room. Now, if you're not really touching these two back anchor points of the room, reach in from the outside of the room and touch them. Okay, end the session. Now, you see this point a little better about extroversion and introversion, so I'll try to demonstrate to you. See that real clear? Now, you can extrovert on nothingness, an extrovert on somethingness, an introvert on nothingness, an introvert on somethingness. So we've added something and nothing here to our process. See that? Now, did any of you get a little perception jump while we were doing this?
Well, we're using mainline material, you might say, and so therefore you can always expect, in the majority of cases, you get a perception jump on such things. Now, you understand that I haven't given you here a process to be processed particularly on pre-clear. It isn't necessarily a process that you would use on some pre-clear or wouldn't use. I've given it to you to demonstrate the directions of attention. But you can use it on pre-clears. This is not something we call process 865-HUMP. And the reason we don't is because it's too mainline, it's too much theory to have a number. It's just straight theory application. That's just straight theory. Extrovert, introvert, attention. And once you started giving everything that came out of straight theory a name or a number, this would become an inexhaustible series. You've got lots of them the second you're on that groove. You just got too many of them. Now look how many ways we can do this. Get your favorite hate in front of you. Now look straight through it. Now get it in front of you elsewhere. And look straight through it to something beyond it. It disappear? Well, you look straight through it. All right, let's get it somewhere else. And look straight through it to something on the other side, or nothing on the other side of it, but look at something beyond it. It disappear? Briefly and comes back. We'll put it out there again and look through it again. Okay. Throw it aside. Now put it out there again and have it look straight through you and find nothing. Throw it away and put it out in front of you and have it look straight through you and find nothing. Throw it aside and have it look through you now. Now throw it away. Now put your attention on the back of the room and find no wall there. Attention on the body and find no body there. Now find a body there. And put your attention on the two back anchor points of the room. And give me some places where you are not. Okay. End the session. Well, some of you might have had difficulty looking through this, and one or two might not have been able to get something there. But let me show you that hate is stopped lookingness. And that to see at all, you have to stop lookingness. The whole trick of perception is stopping your lookingness or stopping your smellingness at a certain thing, you see, at a certain distance. It's quite a trick. And there's the soul of perception, just in those few sentences. That is perception. Now you wonder why somebody goes blind or can't see as a thetan. Well, confound it, he stopped his lookingness.
long enough and often enough to where he has an automaticity that stops his lookingness. And believe me, it finally stops it on blackness or no seeingness. And that's all there is to lack of perception. There isn't anything more difficult than that about those can't see. Now, I'll give you an example. Look at the front wall of this room here. Now, try and tell me that you didn't let your lookingness stop at the front wall. Well, what do you suppose happens to somebody that stops his lookingness for 76 trillion years? He never concentrates on starting his lookingness. He gets to a point after a while where he expects his attention to be attracted. In other words, his lookingness becomes an effect. And as soon as it does, it'll collapse. He ceases to be cause, he becomes an effect, and the communication line puts him on the E end for perception. Unless he's on the C end of the communication line, the cause end of the communication line, he can't see as a thing, or he sees something haywire. You see that? Seeing something haywire is worse than not seeing. Because he's got an automaticity there, an additional automaticity that puts up something else to stop his lookingness. It'll put up new pictures. See, he'll stop his lookingness. Now, he's stopping his lookingness. Now, you can run and turn on and turn off perceptions like mad just by running this as an automaticity. Now, I go over this again. I'm very patient. I'll tell you again how you solve an automaticity. Anything that's happening to the preclear, evidently without his consent, you make the preclear do. This at once makes him be the other thing and makes him cause where he has been in effect. It reverses the communication line and makes him another beingness. You see that now? The law governing it is anything the preclear is doing that's not under his control is remedied by having him do it. This fellow has an eye twitch. This is the most flagrant case I have on record. An auditor who knew this had a person come to him with an eye twitch. You know, what's going on? Like this, the way they do. You know, a tick. This is the easiest thing in the world to solve. So Auditor knew this. He processed the case for a couple of hours, and the fellow went away with his eye twitch. And I noticed the fellow going down the stairs, and I said, what the hell's this all about? The fellow came in to have his eye twitch removed. That was all he was interested in. And although it's not particularly good auditing simply to dive in at some obvious point, neither is it bad auditing. Somebody comes in, you know, and he wants to be missing his eye twitch. So I said to this auditor, why didn't you remove the eye twitch? And the auditor didn't take the dodge of, well, I was just going forward toward theta clearing the way we're supposed to do. He didn't even take that road out. He says, I tried to track it down, and I'm sure it's in birth. So I says, oh, my God. I said, how about Sunday morning coming in, I'll give you a stack of tapes, and you can go all over it again. Well, he did it with great benefit. He came back to me with the brightest face you ever saw, and he says, well, you know what? He says, the eye twitch was an automaticity, wasn't it? Good. Well, we had made our point. How did he solve the eye twitch? By making the guy twitch his eye, of course. This is Q&A. This is all such things. There's nothing to that. That's just that. He would have had the guy sit there and twitch his eye fast, and twitch it slow, and decide to twitch it, and decide not to twitch it, and decide to twitch it, and decide not to twitch it. And he even could have mocked up somebody and had the preclear make his eye twitch, and then he could have had an eye twitch and found out who it was acceptable to, or he could have done a lot of things with his eye twitch, see, without going into birth. And it was about a 10-minute or 15-minute job to turn off this eye twitch. This, by the way, is the big one that, in a completely alien field to us, psychiatry. If you can turn off a tic, we call it tic dolorosa. And if you can turn off tic dolorosa, my God, those boys break out the altar cloth and bow down before Buddha.
They do. Just bing, because that is something it says in all our textbooks just can't be done. Well, we're really getting there when we can do this. Now, there's all kinds of automaticities, and sometimes it takes quite a little while to solve. And I told you about this fellow with his blush. But an auditor that wouldn't recognize an eye twitch wouldn't recognize automaticity. Well, so this preclear gets a dog, see, and the auditor sits there and says, get us a dog now. And the preclear gets a dog, and the auditor says, all right, now put the dog behind you, now move it across the room, now put it on the roof, now put it someplace else, now do this, now do that with it, and so on and so on and so on and so on and so on. And if the session ran off just the way I said, and you were instructing this auditor, you'd say, what's the matter? Aren't you interested in solving the case? Because you didn't ask him what the dog was doing. You didn't nag him. You didn't say, all right, now you got the dog? All right, now move the dog up the corner of the room. Okay, he did that. The preacher says happily, yes. The auditor isn't auditing, really, who doesn't say, now, just how did you do that? Hell with how many times you ask him that. Sure, it keys in all of his automaticities and everything to ask him how he does something and so forth. So what? You can solve that now. So you don't have to be afraid of turning the guy on and off. So he says, well, I put the dog out in front of me and moved him up to the corner of the room. And you say, that's all right then. You're just going to drop the subject. Oh, no, you're not. And you say, and what did the dog do? Oh, well, that's a point. He went out that door and in this door and across and jumped over the light fixture. So, well, but I got him up here in this corner of this room. Now, you can or can't, doesn't matter whether you do or not, particularly, handle every automaticity that comes up, but you sure better know what's happening on this case. And if this is what happened, and your object is to cure this guy of something or other, or your object is to square him around and square his mock-ups around and get him under control, then you have the dog do the same course, more or less, that the dog did automatically. And if the preclear can't accomplish this, you at least alter the course of the automaticity. You let the dog fly around the room and give it a kick once in a while or something of the sort to change its course slightly until at last he can get it under control. You see that? And if it doesn't come immediately under control in something on the order of 15, 20, 30 seconds of this sort of thing, bing. I mean, you're just into a much deeper, more basic automaticity. You're not down to basic on such a chain. And if your purpose is to chase automaticity, then chase it. But you just get the guy to do what he's doing. That's all. Only make him do it. See? That, in essence, is putting him under his own direction. And his case is off, and his abilities are off only where they happen without his consent. This fellow says, all I get out of life is just, I know, this is just, it's bad luck. I build a service station and it burns down, and I marry this girl and she runs off with my partner, and I have a baby, and the baby turns out to be green with purple spots, and I go down to the store and I get a $10 bill, and it turns out to be a $1 bill, and this is just the way life goes. Well, really, honestly, he's not doing it to himself. But it's very peculiar that it keeps happening with such consistency. And anything that happens with consistency, you'd better add up a survival pace. And this is an automaticity. He's trying to change his luck or some such thing. Well, how do you make him change his luck? Just handle it as an automaticity. Well, you can handle this up on a creative processing basis. You can handle it with ease if he can be creatively processed. Then you have him be bad luck. And you have him curse himself into bad luck. And you can do such things as having put his hat on the desk and then turn around and covertly knock it off as he turns. And then curse a devil or a demon or something for having knocked it off. Or blame you for knocking it off. Now, I ran one guy like this who always had bad luck, he said, on just this basis. I mean, he put his hat on the corner of the desk,
and then had him turn in such a way as to knock it off and then curse me for it. And I had him do this several times. And all of a sudden he says, big like dogs. He says, you know, he says, that's really what I do. He said, how'd you know that? He thought that, yeah, he says, these things happen and so forth. And he says, gee, he says, you know, I kind of remember when the service station burned down. I know that linseed oil rags and so forth laid in the pile, and I carefully kept that pile of linseed oil rags alongside of the barrel of naphtha. And he said, eventually caught on fire. He says, by golly, you know, he says, sometimes a fellow's left hand doesn't know what his right hand's doing. I wonder how many other things I'm doing like this. We got quite spooked, so he had to be processed a little bit more on what? On putting his hat on the desk and knocking it off covertly. And then blaming me for it. And then blaming the chair for it. And then changing his mind and blaming the corners of the room for it. And then blaming his shoes for it. And then finally blaming himself for it bitterly. And then finally just doing it. His luck changed. A man sows the seeds of his own luck. There is no question about this. It also is true that strange and peculiar things can happen to somebody every once in a while without being a complete automaticity. Strange things do happen. But when they get consistent, he's got it set. He's got it rigged. Now you see something about processing. What the preclear is doing automatically, you make him do it. And you can have him do anything. Any automaticity can be worked out with automatic processing. And there's where your opening procedure, rather. There's where your ingenuity may come in. Now let's take havingness and work it with the body. Or work it with the guy exteriorized. Now actually, Burke was doing this the other day. And he was plowing around with it, and he was having very good luck. It doesn't exceed our definitions, and is a process, which is a very interesting process, particularly the way he was doing it. He had somebody pick up a couch, both ends of it, and then step back from it and feel degraded. And then pick it up and get all this lovely mass, it's all mine, and then step back from it and feel degraded. And he went on picking out other pieces of stuff in the room, and the fellow went from the couch and backing up and feeling degraded down to a match head. The guy finally is perfectly content to pick up a match head and feel that and exteriorize from the match head, that is to say, and back up from it and feel degraded. And the fellow's concept about mass and havingness was quite changed. Now, the case that is difficult to exteriorize has mass trouble. And every time the case tries to exteriorize, their knowingness goes to zero. They exteriorize. But their knowingness goes to zero for an instant. They come back in and they don't know about it. Now, there's many a preclear that you've exteriorized that you ask him at the end of the session after he's re-interiorized. You say, well, now, how did you get along while you were exteriorized? And the fellow tells you, I don't know that I was out. Well, while he was out, he was perfectly certain he was out. Well, you kick back in this automaticity of having a body which is mass. And it blots out his knowingness. And so we get a knowingness diminution problem. See that? His knowingness goes down while he's inside the body. And that's the way it really is. Degrading just because one steps out, you know, exteriorizes from mass, you know, exteriorize somebody from some mass, and he feels degraded, is the inversion. That's inverted. The original on the track, the earlier moment, is feeling degraded because he's gotten into some. So you have to run it both ways to get both ends of the communication line. Now, what is an inversion? An inversion is a swapped communication line. Things swapped ends, that's all. When the fellow outflows, he inflows. That's an inversion. You know, you say, put some motion in the wall, and he can feel the emotion hitting him hard in the face, but not going into the wall. He's getting it backwards. You know, when you tell him to put something out there, it hits him here. Well, that's just a turned-around communication line. There's a demonstration process, not a good process, but it's a demonstration process whereby you just make the guy be two ends of the communication line. You just swap a communication line in front of him. You just have him mock up or have a piece of string in front of him and call it a communication line. It's just this literal. And have him be on one end of it and then on the other end of it. And you'll just take a fellow with a yardstick or something and make him reverse the yardstick in front of his face. He doesn't know anything about communication lines. He starts feeling mighty funny, mighty soon. Because communication lines are actually lines. And most people are on the line, not at C or E. They consider themselves particles. They're symbols, particles. They are a piece of mass. All right. Let's take a look now at hate in this universe, and you'll see what I'm driving at. Hate, or any ridge, and all of them contain to some degree or another hate, is necessary to stop somebody's perception. An individual gets so he doesn't like things very well, and that's what he feels is wrong with him. He doesn't like living. He hates it. Or he's in apathy about it. Well, apathy is a ridge. Hate is a ridge. Boredom is a ridge. You got a whole series of ridges there that are various emotions, and the central pinpoint emotion is hate. So he looks at that wall over there, and he stops his lookingness at the wall, and after he's looked at the wall enough, by golly, he doesn't feel good about life. He doesn't feel good about life at all. Well, what's the point here? He's actually dramatizing one of these undesirable emotions by looking at a wall. So long as he expects the wall to attract his attention, he wants to be the effect of the wall. Then he winds up by having to stop his looking, and he winds up blind after a million years or two. Well, now, there's nothing wrong with looking at walls. One of these drills, which puts his attention out on the walls of the room, for instance, simply shows him that he can look at the wall without going blind. And this is something new, Mr. Anthony. And so a lot of people get an awful lot better just by walking over and patting the wall. They can perceive a wall, and they're not struck dead. They feel if they really saw the wall, that they really would go blind. Well, now, the truth of the matter is, they have to stop their looking to see. You have to stop smelling to smell. You have to stop hearing to hear. You have to stop sound to hear. That should be quite obvious to you. You have to stop perceiving to perceive. And so we get on the handsomest set of maybes you ever saw. Now, you as an auditor, knowing this, should be able to turn on almost anybody's perception. How do you get him to do it? Well, you have him see things and look through them, of course. And then have something else on the other side look through things at him. The most reliable process is that process which specializes in nothing. In looking throughnesses and in nothings. Because the only machines that are actually going to cause you a lot of trouble are the unmockers. Two kinds of machinery, the mock and the unmock. Two kinds of automaticities, mock up, unmock. And the poor fellow who has decided never to unmock anything anymore, of course, is getting everything unmocked automatically because he simply selected that automaticity out for his randomity. You understand that? The fellow who decides that he's going to live and let it all be there and he's going to preserve everything and he's not going to waste things. The one big booby trap in Lao Tzu's The Way, by the way, the Tao, is economy. Everybody must practice economy. Oh, boy. That means you're going to save everything. Just let's all slit our throats. Because the second you say that, then you choose out for your randomity the unmockers. All the machines you ever set up within your beingness to make things disappear are chosen out by you as your randomity, as your enemy. If you're having trouble understanding randomity, just substitute enemy for it, and you've got a better understanding of it, if a less exact definition. So what happens if he wants to make everything survive and persist forever? He has immediately canceled out and not taken any further responsibility for all those things which he has that automatically destroy things. So he set up all of his unmockers as his enemy. He's got a lot of unmockers, believe me. He's got just as many unmockers as he has mockers. Gadgets, machinery to get rid of things which he has set up. Now, he's got a machine, nearly everybody has a machine, that says, well, no, if I mock up something and forget about it, this will unmock it. You know, he's left this mock up outside the cave or something. And he runs over it one day and he bumps into it. Or another mock up bumps into it and he decides this is cataclysmic, that his memory is not reliable or something. And he decides for the sake of the game to set up a little machine that after he has forgotten about a mock up, it will be unmocked. And that's an unmocker. Now life goes along and a lot of things get destroyed and he decides that everything's got to persist now. He's just chosen out that automaticity. You see, an automaticity isn't necessarily a randomity until you really make it so. And then the fellow says all of a sudden one day, everything's going to persist now. We're going to save everything, and everything's going to continue, and we're not going to change things. And, oh boy, at that moment, all of his unmockers become his enemy. So he tries to put up a mock-up, and of course it disappears. And he says, oh my, my, the gods are afflicting me, with his belly full of rotten whale. The gods are afflicting me because they're unmocking all my mock-ups. That's what we call a god trick, by the way, unmocking somebody's mock-ups. They say, what? Your mock-ups are being unmocked? Oh, you poor fellow. I guess God's got it in for you. One Thetan does it to another. He goes around and knocks the other guy's mock-ups kicking, you know, or steals them or something of the sort. And then he sympathizes with him for having lost them, tells the other fellow how afflicted the other fellow is. The God trick. They dramatize that in churches and so forth. Well, you see that trick, by the way? You better know it in passing, just as a glance. Never mention it again. The God trick. You run into something, and he's got some nice mock-ups there. And so you eat them up or make them disappear or something when he hasn't his attention on them. And then you say, you poor fellow, you poor fellow. God is afflicting you. I heard of a fellow whose mock-ups disappeared like this, and he found out later that he had offended the great deity Spazwaz. And Spazwaz, you know, occupies all space and eats up mock-ups. And the other fellow said, oh, woe is me. He now has a hidden influence. And the hidden influence and the invisible barrier are dramatized by people who wear glasses. Also, by anybody who uses eyeballs to look through. You know, he never looks at the eyeballs. He looks through them all the time and tries to pretend he's not looking through an eyeball. And after a while, of course, he has this wonderful and interesting thing occurred. His attention inevitably falls on the eyeball because it's become such a strain to continue to overlook the eyeball. So you get the invisible barrier. But the invisible barrier and the fact that it can exist rather gives the fellow the idea that something else can exist, which is to say, a hidden influence. So he looks for deeper significances beyond everything. He never takes anything on the flat plane out there where it's completely visible. He looks for some deeper significance. Now, the fellow who has unmocking machines going, which unmock all of his mock-ups and which mock up blackness so that he won't have to look at mock-ups and so forth, has gotten into this situation. Everything is unmocking around him. So he says, some hidden influence is doing this to me. And you as an auditor are sitting there auditing him, and he keeps expecting you to mysteriously vanquish and banish this item called an unmocker. He expects you to solve the hidden influence that's making his life go haywire. You see that? What's the hidden influence? The hidden influence is an automaticity that he has selected out for his randomity. A fellow who is trying to survive and persist only and never destroy has, of course, selected out all of his unmockers as his randomity. So they, of course, are quite active. Now, he feeds them energy. He doesn't give them direct attention. You notice in the earlier lecture I said direct attention. And automaticity is never otherwise than given some kind of attention. And it'll drain a guy dry of every energy he can put out or gather up or do anything of the sort. It'll just drain him dry. It's a vampire mechanism. He says, I'm not giving this unmarker any attention. I'm not. I don't want to unmark my markups. I like markups. See that? And yet, by conduit and circuit and around Robin Hood's barn and over the hills and far away, he is feeding a terrific amount of energy to that unmarker. Of course, he's really not using energy at all, but his attention by relay systems is going to it, by an associative system, is going around here and actually empowering this thing which is destroying him. A person is only destroyed by that which he himself creates. And this is a fundamental law. This isn't just a philosophic observation, as it might well be. The only ethical crime is to deny yourself. I pondered that a long time, and finally, automaticity and randomity and case solution suddenly turned it up as a fact. Because you go back and dig Mama out of the grave and have her come up here and straighten him out. No, sir, by your auditing of his foibles, he straightened out. And told you immediately the only mistake he ever made was to deny himself. So he sets up an automaticity, and then he says it isn't his. That's self-denial, denial of self. See? Then he's a victim. Whose victim? His own victim. But he's feeding this stuff covertly around the other way. So the fellow who is making things disappear is, of course, unmocking madly. Now let's get into another phase of this very rapidly, and that is that this unmocking machinery, all of this gimmick stuff and so on, is based on the fact that there's more validity to nothing than there is to something any day of the week. Processing a nothingness is actually more important to an auditor than processing a somethingness. If you had your choice between processing a nothingness and somethingness, you better process the nothingness. It's better to process the space around the mock-up and duplicate it than it is the mock-up. That's just a little general rule. Of course, you'll run into the guy's thirst for havingness and various other things, but you'll get further in the long run if you concentrate on nothingness than on somethingness. Because the truth of the matter is functionally, it's all composed out of nothingnesses. The amount of substance in the universe, even to a nuclear physicist, if all reduced down, wouldn't be much of a challenge to the head of a pin. It's composed of space. You see that? So you process nothingnesses, you're processing the better part of the universe. You process somethingnesses, and you're just confirming this guy's search for something. And he'll search for something for a long time. And now we want to turn on perception. All right, perception has stopped lookingness, isn't it? All right, you can turn on the damnedest feelings of weakness in a preclear. You can just make him sicker than a pup processing nothingnesses. Because his whole career, he has been going on trying to find something. See that? His whole career is based upon finding something, isn't it? Amounting to something, being something, never running into a nothingness of food, you know, having food, having money, and so forth. And his nothingnesses, he chooses out on the bad side of the ledger. He wants no sickness. He'd be a hell of a lot better off if he just started out at the beginning saying he wanted no money. He would now be drowning in the stuff. Inverted universe, you see. But he's never really gone on a no basis of anything. For instance, the medical profession doesn't even vaguely go out for no sickness. They'd all starve, and they know it very well. Their gags and stories they tell on each other and to each other, the most part based on this sort of thing. The only aberrative experience, for instance, Susie had in the hospital was three doctors coming in about 6-8 hours after she delivered, and having a big confab and talking about this terrific appendectomy that found this beautiful girl all rotten inside. And they held this conversation on with a beautiful glee of insanity going on. Yeah. They instinctively were doing exactly what they would do in order to aberrate somebody and get somebody loused up, make somebody sick. That was the only pain she had in suspension, was a pain in her side. She couldn't understand where this pain in the side came from. And she was sufficiently blotto, you see, that some of this conversation went through because she resisted the presence of people to some degree, the way anybody will who's had an experience. And simply the resistance to people would key this in and would suddenly get her confused and mixed up with something else. You know, it happened to... probably spun most quickly that you run into. But I ran this condition simply by getting the nothingness of doctors and getting an abundant nothingness of doctors. And we found out that getting an abundant nothingness of doctors was quite a job. To get enough nothingnesses of doctors. All right. Now, if you've noticed, every once in a while your preclear will see something. Perceptions will start to turn on, and then all of a sudden they'll go off. And almost all of you had the experience of getting somebody's perceptions pretty good and then having him shut them off willfully and viciously and just to spite you. Well, that isn't what he did. That isn't what he did. He ran into an automatic flinch. And you put that down. Make it a technical term, an automatic flinch. And it'll suddenly describe to you what happens when this happens. This fellow's doing an automatic flinch from hate. He's doing an automatic flinch from hot stoves. He's doing an automatic flinch from things that'll get him into trouble. He set this up as automaticity. He set an automaticity up that'll get me out of trouble before I get mired in too deep. See? If I walk into this theta trap, why, this automaticity will get me the hell out of that theta trap before I get trapped. See? And that's an automatic flinch. And when you do an automatic flinch too often, of course, the fact that you just seeing a wall is stopping lookingness. You see that an automatic flinch is a shutoff of lookingness. Every once in a while, you'll have the experience of a preclear will suddenly get this beautiful, solid, three-dimensional mock-up and go ping. Off it goes. He's scared. The manifestation of the flinch is so thoroughly installed that the second he sets something up that is solid, that he sets up, he flinches from it because he knows, as well as he knows his own name, probably much better than he knows his own name, that he is the one who gets himself into trouble. So he sets up something to flinch from it. And he sets up something, the automatic flinch sets in, and the mock-up disappears, and off goes his perceptions. But it isn't something he's doing consciously or willfully. What's happened there is an automaticity is turned on. And the fact that he flinches is, of course, a dispersal in reverse. You get that? There's a dispersal around the mock-up, so he believes then he is afraid of it, merely because he pulls out so fast. And fear is pulling out, so he's scared. So you look in vain for any deeper significance to these manifestations. The fellow sees something and it scares him. He does an automatic flinch. Now, when a person sees something that is new, surprising, or that doesn't understand, he does an automatic flinch. It's an automaticity. So one of the things you can do is to go around and have him look. This is opening procedure in a body or exteriorized. Have him go around and do this. Have him go around and look at the ashtray and then suddenly say, no, 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 no. And go around and look at a corner of the room and say, no, 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 no. And do this damn fool automatic flinch. And you do it in its various forms, such as automatically letting go of something. You have him close his eyes and put something in his hands and have him let go of it before he can recognize it. See? And that's an automatic flinch. He's gotten to the point where he won't even look at something. And the other thing is to make him look through things. And now I will give you a little tip here, which we would call, you know, it's quite remarkable. Somebody says Scientology is a religion, and that's going to be the end of us, and Scientology, so on and so on. It's very, very silly. for the good reason that we've invaded the entire field of livingness. So, of course, there is the religion of Scientology, there is the science of Scientology, and you could get into almost anything. Well, here's really Elizabeth Arden Scientology. Now, you want some Elizabeth Arden Scientology? Well, I wish I had a bunch of dime store mirrors here for you to practice on the next hour, because you see something fabulous about this. But most of you girls got mirrors. All right, take a mirror out if you got one there. Got them? Oh, you got your mirrors. Okay. Now, just look in this mirror. And by the way, we could make $18,000 billion, right? Just like a breeze, by selling magic mirrors. Now, you look in this mirror.
I'm not French.
All right, now look in this mirror. You can actually run out the automatic flinch this way. I'll show you that one first. Look at it and flinch. Now look at it again and flinch. That's right. Now look at it again and flinch. Now look at it again and flinch. Look at it again and flinch. Good. Look at it again and flinch. Look at it again and flinch. All right. That's the first part of the exercise. All right. Now, the other one is much, much better. And this is the one that we would use for broadly. Now, you look in that mirror and see there your ideal self. Don't see your mess self at all, see? See there your ideal self. Don't pay any attention whatsoever to the image. Just look at the image and actually see in its place your ideal self. Now, I'll do another flinch. Okay. Now, look at it now and look at it very fixedly and see your ideal self. Don't pay any attention to your mass vision of you at all. Just see your ideal self in that mirror. To see your ideal self in it. All right, put it there. Just whatever you have to do to see your ideal self. Just get the total fact that you're looking right straight at a mirror image of your mass body's face, but see your ideal self. And any depth you want to in the mirror. All right, now you guys practice it, too.
You see how to do this?
You can work over your whole head and put your muscles, really, kick ass?
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Yeah, you got all faces.
This is Elizabeth Arden Scientology. Elizabeth Arden, very, very old and very knocked apart, is right here in Phoenix at this time, by the way. If some of you were to get hold of her and just give her that as a prescription, you would turn her on again. All right, what does this do, basically? That's right, it breaks the agreement with the messed universe on appearance. Oh, yeah, sure. You look at things that aren't mirrors and assume they are mirrors. Yeah, this is the next step. Is look at things that aren't mirrors and assume they're mirrors and see your ideal self. See, that's really busted it with the mass universe. But the other's plenty good. Now, the rest of the trick, yeah, I'll just mention it briefly. It kicks you out of past bodies. And that's how valuable that technique is. See, it's a lot of fun to your pre-clear. You see how much fun that is? Well, that's real painless processing. But don't be too amazed if you were to have him on an E-meter and see almost immediately the theta bop, which indicates a guy stuck in a body someplace on the track. See that theta bop turn on. Because he's got his track collapsed back to the point when he had what he considered an ideal body. And we get into the problem of processing a beautiful woman. And that's a real tough problem, processing a beautiful woman. Trying to exteriorize her. You get a woman that's even vaguely close to pretty, or who has found that her beauty has given her conquests with men, something like that. And you start processing her, you start exteriorizing her. No, no, no. Somebody's liable to steal this mock-up, and all kinds of other things are liable to occur there. You start to exteriorize, and they start to get frantic, something like this. Or they'll find fault with you. They'll decide that they are a body, and they'll dodge around. You have to put the various emotions which turn up as you try to exteriorize them in the various walls and put them in false walls, that is, walls that are out further or in closer than actual walls. And the other part of this, of course, is looking throughness. And if you look at something, you validate its distance. And therefore, you validate hate. Now, when you look through things, you validate love. You validate love. Did you ever notice a fellow who is angry? Here's a little manifestation of it. A fellow who's angry is always saying, look at me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they try to call it down on the track by saying, he looks straight through me. As though I wasn't there, and this is supposed to be something very, very sad. Now, the man is always falling in love with the woman he puts there. And the woman is always falling in love with the man that she puts there. And they very, very seldom fall in love with the person who is standing there. And this leads to a great deal of emotional disturbance in divorce courts. Because we run into granting beingness at this point. They grant beingness to this other person. It's quite effective, this granting of beingness. I have seen a harlot turn into a chaste woman with a tremendous personability, quite the lady, simply because somebody had granted her beingness to such a degree. And then this busted up and so forth, and boy, she went over her appetite over tin cup down the slot again. And I've seen some bum that wouldn't work and wouldn't do anything in life turn into quite a beaver and be a terrific guy for the length of time that he was married to some woman who was granting him beings. And so we run that little manifestation out with this mirror trick. And it's done with mirrors to get a lot of this stuff up. And that is the most direct procedure, which I know, by the way. Now, you'll get a flip-flop on this mirror. The guy will interiorize into the body which he's seeing in the mirror if you make him concentrate on that body. So you want to watch for this. If the guy flip-flops, he's just seeing his own face there. There's a theoretical psychotic technique where you could use in an institution that you would put up a series of mirrors so the fellow would see himself match terminal in profile. Real tricky, huh? And he would actually run out some of his worser characteristics. You just set him in a box. Now, that is so far superior to electric shock or anything they're doing today that it would appear to be a major miracle for psychiatry. Just a couple of mirrors. We'll get some of the boys together someday and build some kind of a coffin arrangement on this before this unit's over. We get some time and we'll test this out. I'll show you how it's done. I'll show you how one's made. There are about four methods of treating psychotics today, all of which obviate auditing of psychotics. And if you've seen a Scientologist get into bad condition, it's generally been because he's had to audit a psychotic. I had a letter from a very pathetic lady who was auditing a young man and was doing all right in Dianetics for a couple of years and then started to audit this case, only she didn't add it up this way. The world sort of caved in on her. And of course, this fellow won't really kill her, but he keeps saying this all the time. He's lived with her now for 8 months and she's in real difficulty and so forth. She's been auditing a psycho. Well, she goes into communication with a psycho, and of course she's unwilling to be the other end of the line. And an auditor who is operating under that much pressure on this calm line, who himself is not in excellent condition, of course can sooner or later expect to be followed up, which tells you why medicine and psychiatry haven't got a chance as professions. A man in those professions hasn't got a chance as long as he is without a remedy for what is happening to him, which is the C&E communication line. See, and he has no remedy for the CE communication line. Now, how would you audit a psychiatrist? Well, actually, you wouldn't audit him with a subjective technique. You'd audit him with opening procedure, real carefully. Now, one other tip about opening procedure, it works with great ease as long as you pinpoint positions. You see that? And we'll call this pinpointing. And an auditor omitting pinpointing is not solving the main condition, which is the trouble with some of his preachers, and that is they're, quote, buttered all over the universe. And it's this pinpointing itself which brings in an enormous amount of certainty. And you have, as long as I'm rolling on this, I'll give you the other one, just to bog you down, as a variation on goals processing. It's a plus and minus, that is to say, what can you do and what can't you do in brackets. And the others to others, of course, is what can't somebody do to somebody else, and give me some things somebody can do to you now and something somebody can't do to you now. Get somebody else now. Give me three things which he can't do to you and three things which he can do to you. And get somebody else out there now and give me three things which you can't do to that person and three things which you can do to that person. And get two other people out there. Now get three things the first can do to the second and now three things which the first can do to the second. Now get three things which you can do to yourself, three things which you can't do to yourself. And somebody else, three things which he can do to himself, herself, and three things which he can't do. All right. Now that is an extension of goals processing, and this, beware. Beware your certainty on this, because people who are in bad condition believe anything can be done to them by anybody. There is the first time we have crossed terminals very neatly with goals processing, with brackets, and with, well, there's something very important there, is the solution, direct solution of justice. You'll find there's an hour tape in the second clinical unit on the subject of justice. I'm not going to repeat the subject. It's just that justice is important to people. Very important. So the solution to justice is solved by this little process I just gave you. And this is a process all by itself. It is, unfortunately, a subjective process, but it can be used objectively. Just to say, while our opening procedure. Now, do some things which you can do. And that's as far as it goes on opening procedure, and actually is all that's necessary to process some cases to break them up above the cycle line. And you say, now give me a couple of things. Tell me something that you can do in this room. And a person who is pretty bad off is liable to sit there for 10, 15, 20 minutes. They can do what you tell them to do, but something that they can do, to ask them to actually invent something that they can do. They might have regularly jumped off the bed and flown around the room and done all sorts of weird things, you see. But these were things they were doing rather than things they can do. Now, by the way, you run an automatic flinch on some people, you will turn them into weak as jelly. Now, you get an automatic flinch from a nothingness of earth. An automatic flinch from a nothingness of earth. Duplicated, 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 duplicated. Not the best process in the world, but it certainly produces some effect. But reach and withdraw processing is, to a large degree, successful, simply because it processes out the automatic flinch. You get them reach and withdraw from dangerous things. The other thing, that things you can do and things you can't do, is a pattern, of course, to many of the other processes which we have. So you run it also on this basis. Give me some things you can't get away from. And it crosses with the automatic flinch. Some things you can get away from. You don't run that one double, by the way. You just run that one as it is. Can and can't do, and you just get things you can get away from at this moment. Just look around the room right now. Give me some things you can get away from. Give me three things you can get away from. Because it isn't the truth.
Why not?
Things you can and can't do is the truth.
But it isn't the truth that you can't get away from something. You can always get away from anything. Yeah, I'd better put that in here as a little footnote to this morning's dissertation. Well, let me catch you processing into contrary to truth. You see, it isn't true that you can do anything you want in this society. As soon as you say in this society, it ceases to be the truth that you can do anything you want. It ceases to be a society if it runs completely without arbitraries and without restrictions or limits. See? And so you say you can and can't. Things that you can do at this moment, things you can't do at this moment. There'd be consequences to many things that you did. For instance, if you run out in the street and tear all your clothes off, you would find consequences for the act. So can and can't is perfectly proper. But let's say things you can't get away from. There isn't any such animal. And you're actually telling a lie when you process it completely. So you keep these things on the highest level of truth that you can keep them on. That's all. You run three places where you were not. Well, hell, you can run that endlessly because, believe me, fella, you're not any place. You get that? You can be any place you want to decide you are, but you have to decide before you're there. Or your auditor has to decide you're there and tell you to be there, tell you can be there. If this were not true, your lot would be in a horrible situation. Your case would be unsolvable, and this race and everything else about it would be unsolvable if you were anywhere, actually, finitely, in the meshed universe. Because the meshed universe is a communication trap where all spaces are consecutive to all spaces, where associative logic is a fait accompli, where everything is in communication with everything else. You are trapped in space. If you were in it, you would be trapped, but that's true of any trap. You are trapped only if you are in it. And if you aren't anywhere, of course, you can't be trapped. Now, the Thetan solves this by materializing nothing. He even goes that far. He's so careful he won't even materialize a mock-up. He won't do anything that really tells him he's trapped. It's a big trap, this universe. Some of your cases will come up with a sudden horror. It's a lot of your cases. Any case that's down around 5, 6, you can expect him to come up through a terror, horror band at the realization that he is in the meshed universe and is trapped here. And this is a gigantic trap. It's a gigantic trap composed of black space. It's pretty gruesome. And if you were in it, your case would be unsolvable. But you're not in it. So you can go on forever saying, give me three places where you're not, three places where somebody else is not. It's just the truth. They're not any place. You're an object. You can give me three places where that object isn't. Well, you assume the object is there, maybe because it's there by postulate. It's there. That object is there. And three places, however, where objects are not, well, that's all right. There is a place where it is. So you're telling the truth consistently even there. You see that? You're telling the truth. Well, now, a fellow asking this question, three places where you couldn't be in the future. Process won't hold. Won't do anything to the preclear. Because it isn't processing toward truth. There isn't any place in the future where he can't be. He could be any place in the future. Where he will be in the future is a different thing. So you say, all right, give me three places in the future where you won't be tomorrow. Give me three places where you won't be tomorrow. Well, he can give you thousands of places where he won't be tomorrow. There is a place where he will, according to his own agreement, be tomorrow. And you can pick up a fellow's prediction and knowingness level on this process alone, where he won't be present, past, and future, in that order. Present, past, future is the proper order. The proper order is not past, present, and future. It's not a consecutive thing. And you solve a case like that. He can give you some places where he's not in the present. And he all of a sudden bogs on places where he's not in the past. He has a creepy feeling he's all over the past.
You just give him some more places where he's not in the future. And then you go to past again, you'll find some places in the past where he's not. All right, he can find some places in the past where he's not, but he can't find any places in the future where he won't be. You just give him some more places where he isn't in the past, and that solves the future. You got that one? The proper order is present, past, future. And that's why it's that way in 8C. It wasn't there by accident. Do you get that now? If a fellow, all right, let's say this tree clear can't find where he's not in the past. He doesn't get this immediately. Well, you just give him some more where he isn't in the present. You see how easy that is? Where he isn't in the present, and then you get the future, and he can't find places where he's not in the future, and he's having a hard time with that. Just get some more where he's not in the past, and you'll find out very shortly that he'll be able to find places where he's not in the future. Present, past, future. That is the order. Okay? We have covered, as usual, quite a little bit of ground. But you will find out very readily that we are practically covering the same ground every day. Covering it with a different coat and a different hat and a different application level. And the thing that is you're varying on is application. That is being given to you in an advancing line, and you're being given a little more advanced methods of application of this material every day. But you aren't being varied on your basic theory. And you've gotten this basic theory practically every day over and over and over and over and over. But you should sooner or later begin to distinguish between these two things very, very readily. And you should be able to take basic theory and get all the processes you want out of it. What I give you here are tested processes, which are very good. By the way, did the auditor who used this places where you won't be in the future, did he get that this morning? An auditor has been asking it pretty clear that. Places where you couldn't be in the future. Process toward truth. And you win. Process toward falsehoods and you lose.
Are all subjective techniques
limited? All of them. Because they treat one universe. You're going to wake up with a terrific shock one of these days while being processed to the fact that the other universe is not only in existence, but is habitable by you, the other fellow's universe. Right now, you know that you're going to inhabit some degree, some kind of an arrangement you call your own universe. You don't consider that very sharp, probably, but it's there. And then you know there's the meshed universe, because we process that, and the other fellow's universe is something to you which is, to a large degree at this moment, I'm sure, conceptual. It doesn't have dimension and so forth. And one of these days, you're going to wake up with a terrible shock. You're going to do change of universe processing on somebody after he's exteriorized. And out he's going to go. And you'll say, all right, be your own universe, be the messed universe, be somebody else's universe. And at that moment, his case will bust into flinders. Be somebody else's universe. And you'll ponder it for a moment, and you'll look around. And, well, I got an idea. Let's see, he'll mock one up, the schnook. You say, no, find somebody else's universe and be it. Well, where do I look for one? Well, just go on and look for one. Well, how about somebody's head? How about that? That'll do for a starter. He gets into a few people's heads. And all of a sudden, there is one. What do you know? And then you just change processing. Change the space. Change him from universe to universe to universe, to universe to universe to universe. His own, the mess, another fellow's. His own, the mess, another fellow's. His own, the mess, another fellow's. Bing, 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 bing. Boy, things start to bust all over the place, and he all of a sudden says, well, there's one universe I can inhabit, and that's my father's universe. I won't inhabit it. Just have me. Just do some more change processing. All of a sudden he says, well, he had one too, so what? It's not a very good one. Moldy. And he'll get off of that, and all of a sudden, one day, you'll find Pop's universe. Bing. He's got it. And after that, he has no familial difficulties. If you don't solve this one with Freeclear all the way down the line, by the way, you'll keep on having interpersonal relationship difficulties. That process is completely unlimited. The mess process is only partly unlimited, which is to say, call it an unlimited process if you want. But what did you think to a guy about it after what I've told you this morning? If you kept a fellow looking at walls, huh? But supposing you just kept a fellow looking at walls, hour after hour after hour after hour, feeling walls, looking at walls, being in walls, being in meshed universe space, just hour after hour after hour after hour, and you never shifted it out, well, you would be validating hate. Emotionally, you'd be validating apathy, ridges, hate, anything solid. The meshed universe is a game, is a game, is a game, is a game, composed of barriers, and the barriers are space. Objects, such as walls or any other object, and time, and these are the barriers of the meshed universe, of which the most serious is time. And that is the game. And a fellow gets to thinking after a while that he has barriers in his thinkingness. And you give some fellow this process of give me three things which you can't do now. And you start to knock out the barriers of thinkingness. And that is, by the way, a terrific process. All right, now in your group processing today and for the rest of this week, let's do as good a job as we can on standardized group processes rather than using on the group. That's a little bit tough in your group auditor. But remember this. Your pre-clears have been getting variations in their auditing sessions. And the group process is there to pull them up and stabilize them. So let's give them a predictability, which is the total message, a predictability in that group auditing session. Let's have fun at it and everything, but let's give them a good, solid predictability, because they haven't had one in their auditing session in many cases. Okay? All right. And the group processes, of course, we have several of them. We have Short 8, we have 6 Steps to Better Beingness, and we have 8C group, which is listed right on your list there. Now, I pull on the group here occasionally processes for demonstration rather than just to drive home the point and give you a look at something rather than a process which is very therapeutic. I dare say there's a couple of you feel worse for my having processed through this one. It's very possible. Merely because I didn't carry it on very far, you see. You start processing nothingness of bodies and nothingness of walls, you're just as likely as not to have some pre-clear in a group suddenly Chucky's cookies. That's death and dynamite. Okay, any questions? Yes.
How is the corner of the genre stimulate that hate too? Or how does people hold on for hours?
Oddly enough, the guy is so bad off that you're asking to do that. Almost any kind of condition he's in, that it's way upscale. The meshed universe in good contact with is way upscale. It is so high above scale for most PCs that it's when they cross the barrier, that is to say, get to a point where they can tolerate the meshed universe, gee, they're in wonderful shape. So as a consequence, it is, as I said, a limited technique in its furthest reductio ad absurdum, but is so fitting for your PC that you could do easily 10 times as many hours of auditing on one PC of making all the corners of the room as you're ever going to put in on any PC. So for all intents and purposes, you have an unlimited technique. Now, you can do automatic flinches from the meshed universe with fantastic success. You can get automatic flinches from the back corners of the room. Now, get a hold of the back corners of the room. Now, get a hold of them very securely now. Now, make up your mind when you're going to flinch and flinch. Now, let's get a hold of two corners of the stove and make up your mind when you're going to flinch and flinch. Now, let's contact a sound somewhere around and make up your mind when you're going to flinch and flinch. Got a car out there? All right, make up your mind when you're going to flinch, flinch from that sound. All right. Now, there's another process that can be done only at night, which is a group process. You get three pieces of blackness within a radius of a mile, which you wouldn't want to be, or wouldn't want to be in. You can do it in the daytime, too, but you find most preclears are not inventive enough to discover it. And then you get three lights, which you would not like to have shining on you right now. And you go back and forth this way in a bracket. You get some lights in a group process. You get some patches of darkness, some pieces of darkness. It's back and forth, back and forth. You get how that would be? By the way, it turns on markups like mad. Okay. Any more questions?
It's duplication of mass and objects. Well, it's supposed to be an introversion.
A duplication of mass and objects?
No,
that's an extroversion, because you actually have the power to materialize a missed object.
Well, nothingness is extroversion, and then the second step is supposed to be introversion, that's the way I understood it.
Mm-hmm.
Introversion.
Looking in is introversion.
Oh, the first step is introversion, the nothingness?
And no, that's an extroversion.
Extroversion, well, then the second
is the second one duplication?
Yeah,
you know, your second one goes into a subjective technique immediately that you carry it forward the way you're supposed to, because you'll find them out of the room. Now, I won't let them duplicate things in the room very long. I have them duplicate things out of the room. And they're really, nine-tenths of your people are simply getting facsimiles outside the room and duplicating them, and they're not outside the room. And the way that technique is done, it amounts to an introversion technique.
You get why it is an introversion technique. It works out that way, that's all. I'll show you how that one's done. Now, take a look at the building next door. I'll get a duplicate of it. Okay, let go of it. And take a look at the building across the street and get a duplicate of it. Let go of that. And look at the Westward Ho Hotel and get a duplicate of it. Okay, now look at the Westward Hotel below you. And get a duplicate of it. I'll let go of that. We'll take a look at Phoenix and get a duplicate of Phoenix. Let go of that. All of your techniques, that's good. Let's be where you were. That's exteriorized you. By the way, did anybody exteriorize on that suddenly? That's a very nice covert method of exteriorization. It could be carried on for quite a little while. With tremendous results. And it gradually, as most any technique does, I hate to say this because it disqualifies our basic definition somewhat, and I don't want to confuse you, but almost any introverted technique turns eventually into an extroverted technique. By the way, that's a test of a good technique. Will this technique, if carried out long enough, turn from an introversion to an extroversion? Will it turn an introversion to an extroversion? If Aiton is cause and is happy as long as he's cause, and therefore is happy as long as he's extroverting. You could say extroverting is being cause. Now, the son of a gun, he never thinks about himself. He never remembers to sleep or eat or do anything of the sort at all. He just goes on entrepreneuring. And here he goes, and people keep telling him he's going to cave in, so he does someday, but that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that as long as he's an entrepreneur, he's just going like house fire. It's only when he runs into too many people, telling him to slow down, and agrees too many times with too many of his own automaticities to slow down. See, it's people agreeing with your automaticities that cave you in about people. The people themselves have no power to cave you in. Nobody's got any power to cave you in. But they sure can use your own automaticities on you by agreeing with them. And so they put them out into the mass production basis. They agree with them, and that makes you right to have that automaticity, you see, so you throw it into action. They make you put your attention on your own automaticities, and that kindles them. But if you didn't have them in the first place, you couldn't do it. You didn't have the automaticity to go off and loaf. Nobody could sympathize with you effectively on how tired you were. If your basic goal wasn't to make a lot of money and quit. If you didn't have that as a basic automaticity, then nobody could make you do it. People cannot make you do anything. This works out by test. People can't make you do anything that you do not have a basic automaticity about, but you put there yourself.
That's why they can say with some little shadow of truth, well, you did it, and it's your fault, and you're to blame, and you're bad cause. See? I mean, that's how they could add this up, because you know sneakingly that it is. It's true. Any other questions? Learn anything this morning? Well, now on processing, how about you guys concentrating on exteriorization? And after lunch, I'm going to take up some methods of and give you an example. So let's go have a bite to eat.